My name is Steve Corbin. I'm a member of the Oral Health Section, and was pleased to be asked by Alice to be involved with what I know will be a fascinating session, and I think probably one of the more provocative ones at APHA, if people can get over the fact it's an oral health session and not, you know, a healthcare reform session or throw the bums out of office session or something like that. This afternoon, we're going to be looking at a specific case about the removal of wisdom teeth, the preventive removal of wisdom teeth, and we're going to have a very robust presentation of an evidence-based review of that issue by Dr. Jay Friedman. On the right here is a colleague, goes back many years. He has been one of the real pioneers in the area of dental prepayment and dental financing, and actually evaluating the impact of prepayment and financing in the oral health field. Jay has been lecturing and writing for several decades about something that he calls fun dentistry, functionally unnecessary dentistry. And we quipped a bit about, I said, funk, functionally unnecessary healthcare might be a new field that we could also develop. So Jay is going to be making a presentation of about 30 minutes. Then we have Dr. David Holtgrave from Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health and Hygiene in Baltimore, who interestingly is not going to be participating in the panel as an expert in a traditional sense or a doctor. He's here as a patient. And he's got his own story to tell about looking at the third molar situation from that side, the patient's perspective. So, you know, at the end of the day, when you're sitting in the chair, I don't care where you go to church or where you got your degree from, you're the patient, and the considerations are the same. We're fortunate to be joined by someone who I think is known to pretty much everybody who's involved in oral health for the last 20 years, and that's Dr. Dushyanta Kleinman. Dr. Kleinman is the former Chief Dental Officer of the United States Public Health Service. We just say the former Chief Dental Officer of the United States, and the Deputy Director of the National Institute of Dental and Craniofacial Research. Very active in public health and public health organizations going back for 20, 25 years, and a colleague of mine going way back also. She's going to provide some reaction to the perspectives presented by Dr. Friedman and Dr. Holtgrave. We have 90 minutes for this session. I want to remind everybody that if you have cell phones or other electronic devices that are going to make noise and disturb us, can you please put it on a vibrate function? And, of course, no smoking here or anywhere else around here. And we should have about 25 minutes for question and answers when we're done. So with that, sit back, enjoy, and then lean forward and engage. Dr. Friedman.
Steve and I were sitting at lunch a little while ago, and he suggested that it might enhance my credibility to explain to you all that at one time I was guilty of everything that I'm going to accuse the oral surgeons of. And I became quite proficient taking out third molars. When I went into the Air Force, I had a two-week training. Well, I shouldn't say training. I worked in the oral surgery clinic for 2 weeks with a young man who was intending to become an oral surgeon. And within those 2 weeks, I learned how to do it. It was really quite easy. And later on, when oral surgeons would tell me how difficult it is to take out these third molars, I would say, well, maybe if it was so difficult for you, you're in the wrong specialty. But I don't know when I decided that what I was doing was wrong. But at a certain point, I came to realize that this is not exactly what we would call good dental care. Whoops, I didn't want to do that. If prophylactic removal of wisdom teeth is a public health hazard, as I believe the evidence clearly demonstrates. And it is also a problem that public health organizations, the various elements of the dental profession and public agencies and private commercial insurance companies, in other words, all of us, must recognize and respond to. Hazards of treatment are not unique to any specific dental specialty, but they are most egregious in connection with the removal of third molars. If the risk of disease was proportionate with the risk of energy, of injury, there would be no issue, but it is not. If I single out the American Association of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgeons, what I shall refer to from time to time as AMOS, it is because AMOS is the major force behind prophylactic extractions. But we should not ignore the responsibility of dental schools, dental educators, the American Dental Association, and our own public health organizations to educate and protect the public when the evidence contradicts the practice. I personally had two previous articles published on the subject to notable disregard. And what prompted my most recent paper in this past September's issue of AJPH was an invitation to speak at an annual meeting of the American Association of Dental Consultants. I chose third molars to illustrate how dental insurance consultants could reduce risks and overcharges by not authorizing unnecessary surgery or overpaying claims. In searching the literature, I came across a reference to an ADA study indicating over 10 million so-called impacted teeth are extracted annually in the United States. Applying the incidence of injury reported in the literature for the removal of third molars to the most current data is basically what this presentation is all about. It is also about our responsibility to take evidence-based practice seriously, to develop policies and standards of care that are based on scientific evidence, not the misinformation of special interest groups. And I speak from the perspective of a specialist in the field. Oh, here we go. In case anybody was questioning my credentials, I received this around 1975. Practice limited to the preservation of third molars. Now, what we really want to do is relegate the predators of practice to posterity, put them in the museums where they belong. Now, the most common fun that is functionally unnecessary extractions are removal of normally erupted or unerupted asymptomatic non-pathologic third molars. Now, let's take a look at AMOS at work. This is what we might call oral health illiteracy, Alice. 1981, AMOS put out this advertisement. Sorry, I clicked that too soon. In major magazines, Time, Newsweek, and so forth, love can make your ears ring, your heart sick, leave you breathless, and wreck your health. So can wisdom teeth. 1981, and like little time bombs, the question isn't will they, it's when will they go off. Again, trouble with a capital T. 9 out of 10 wisdom teeth come in only partially crooked. Serious gum infection. Ringing in the ears, all the way to heart disease, the very same things we're hearing today. 2005 update, no one can predict when third molar complications will occur. 85% of third molars will eventually need to be removed. 2005. Just a few weeks ago, September 28, 2007, AMOS put out a 4-full-page color advertisement advocating the removal of third molars at an early age. I don't know how many of you saw this. Just incredible. Same advertisement. What they did was they indicated that these teeth, see if I can get point them out, they're calling these teeth with the red arrows impacted teeth. Well, the pantograph, it's true, a pantograph will show impacted teeth. It's false here because these are not impacted teeth. They're normally developing third molars. And, you know, you wonder, how in hell could they put this advertisement out with such a false and misleading x-ray and a national advertisement? And what they listed in the sidebar on that same first page, these are the reasons why you should have these teeth removed. Prevent cysts, tumors, complications, receding gum disease. Peace of mind is what they're promising you. It's really wonderful. We are being fed gullibles. New Yorker, August magazine, might help you lose weight, might prevent lots and lots of diseases, could possibly make you smarter. Well, isn't this false and misleading advertising? Shouldn't the same truth in advertising apply to all professions? There wasn't one word in this advertisement, this four-page advertisement, on the risks of surgery. Now, we know in television ads, at least they do tell you what the contraindications are, what you should avoid. Not one word on the risks of surgery. And if that isn't false and misleading advertising, I don't know what is. What do they say? A 2007 update in their pamphlet. Removal of such impacted third molar teeth at an early age is a valid and scientifically sound treatment rationale based on medical necessity. So what we're asking is, what scientific evidence, what medical necessity? Well, what we're talking about is impactions. A few of you people here may not be dentists. That is a tooth that hasn't grown into its position, into its normal position, within the normal period of expectation. With respect to third molars, its age is 16 to 25, plus or minus a few years. And what's interesting in this particular quotation, it seems appropriate to define impaction as a stationary event because many impacted third molars become erupted. They can't even refer to an unerupted tooth as a non-impacted tooth. And down below here, you'll see that many of these teeth which appear impacted or possibly impacting in the x-ray, many of them are going to erupt within the next few years. And this chart simply gives you the expectation of eruption based upon the degree of angulation as the tooth is developing. And I'll show you a few x-rays on that. So here are some normally developing erupting or erupted third molars, which are frequently classified as impactions. Now, this was very similar to the ad that was in the third in the Amos advertisement. These four teeth were taken out by an oral surgeon, and they were called full bony impactions. Well, obviously, they're not impacted. Obvious to anyone except an oral surgeon. Now, this would be called possibly a mesioangular inclination, even though that's the normal pathway. Teeth come up, and they come up in that direction. And yet, a few years later, you can see it's fully erupted and in full occlusion. Here's a situation where if you look at that particular teeth, let me go back to it. This particular one is an angulation problem where the x-ray makes it look like it might be superimposed or growing against the other tooth. But a few years later, you can see that the tooth is fully erupted. And here's a very odd thing. I just threw it in because of the oddity. Here's a tooth that everybody acknowledges is clearly an impacted third molar. I don't know what age this came in, but it was sent to me by Dr. Clark many years ago. But at some time or other, this tooth became a fully erupted and functioning tooth. Oddity, but it can happen. So, third molars should be removed to prevent future pathology. But we know that other teeth are far more involved in pathology than third molars. Should we remove all teeth to prevent future problems? So, do you remember when removing the teeth was a coming of age? Young people would have their teeth extracted as a wedding present, so they wouldn't have any problems in the future. So we have minimum evidence of pathology. Studies have shown that only about 12% of teeth have what we would call true pathology, and I'll show you what that means, looks like. There's no real surge or increase in pathology with an increase in age. Now, we know that the risk of appendicitis, cholecystitis for gallbladder inflammation, is somewhere in the risk of 10 to 12%. Well, same area as the risk of pathology in third molars. Well, why then prophylactic extraction of third molars? Well, I'd say that there isn't any real reason. Well, the 12% pathology, only less than 2% become cystic. Maybe 5% are involved in some periodontal bone loss. And the resorption against the second molar, less than 5%. So all of this adds up to about a 12% pathology. If we add pericarditis, and that is inflammation of the gum tissue, and I'm talking about more than just teething, where the gum tissue actually becomes inflamed, have an average of maybe 8% in the three studies that I'm citing here. Maximum third molar pathology is 20%. In fact, in my analysis, which is following, I'm allowing a third or about a 33% reason to take out teeth. So what Amos is saying is that because you may get today, the big issue in Amos today is that periodontal pathology may potentially be contributing to systemic inflammatory disease. You notice this is what they're really on a fishing expedition, and they're sponsoring a lot of studies by oral surgeons, and they're almost all of the papers have been printed only in the Journal of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery, and they're claiming that because there is a certain amount of periodontal involvement, so they say, we should extract all these teeth. Well, one of the studies showed that 25% of 300 healthy people had at least one probing death, 5 millimeters. That's periodontal bone loss around the tooth. 75% didn't, which they don't mention. So what they're really saying is that we should take out 85% of the third molars because maybe a small percentage of these teeth have a periodontal involvement. So what I'm saying is, good grief, periodontists, they wouldn't be treating these teeth. They'd be coming exodontists. They'd be removing all of these teeth. There'd be no reason to have a specialty of periodontics if we listen to the periodontists, to the oral surgeons. That's another study showed that 48% of healthy second molars had a worsening of their periodontal health condition following the removal of third molars. So there really isn't any sound rationale for taking out these teeth because of periodontal disease. There are other ways of treating periodontal disease if it occurs, and that's why we do have dental hygienists, we have periodontists, and we have general dentists. Now, as far as carcinomas and cysts are concerned, very small risk. Carcinomas, it's less than one. Well, we really have no figure because it's so rare. In terms of cysts, these are two studies that showed it was very low, but what was really interesting here is that here were 2,000 neglected impacted third molars that were retained for an average of 27 years. In other words, people who never had their third molars taken out, they were fully impacted, less than 1% developed a cystic condition, which would maybe be a reason to take them out. Now, just briefly, you've all heard that third molars cause the lower anterior teeth to collapse. It's so totally irrational. How can these teeth embedded in soft cancellous bone, where would they find the support to cause all of these other teeth with their roots in bone like a picket fence, how could they cause them to collapse? Well, there are other probable reasons why teeth become crooked, including the fact that the anterior part of the jaw is too small for the size of the teeth. So the evidence or lack of evidence. Extracting third molars, these are just two other studies which I'm citing here that just say what I've said, that there's no evidence to support taking out third molars to prevent crowding of teeth. Now they say there's going to be less pain if you take them out early. Well, obviously, if you don't take them out at all, you're not going to have any pain. Now, what happens if you do take them out? Well, one of the studies that really, not too much attention has been paid to this, unfortunately, published in International Journal of Technology, that's probably why, 2.27 days of disability normally associated with, this is with an uncomplicated surgical extraction of a third molar. Pain, swelling, bruising, malaise. 2.27 days, uncomplicated surgical extraction. I call that sick and sick. So is it safe and harmless? Yes, except for the complications. And here I list the complications. The most common ones are highlighted in yellow. So there are lots of complications from the removal of third molars, none of which, of course, the oral surgeons are going to mention. They talk about informed consent. You're going to have to really call that misinformed consent when they get the patients to sign off on them. So what you're getting in what I'm going to talk about at great length is the dysthesia, paresthesia, because that's the most common injury, the most prevalent injury, and it's a tingling in the jaw. It's very similar to a lower injection to have when you have your teeth treated where the numbness never goes away. And it can be from a very mild to a very severe condition where you might have shooting, neuralgic pains, and it can be really quite disturbing to a person's life. It's a quality of life issue. It's not a life and death issue. Now, the British National Health Service does not recommend removal, or they recommend against the removal of third molars in the absence of pathology, and then it lists the reasons, which I won't recite here. But there are good reasons to take these teeth out, but it doesn't account for more than 20% of the teeth, and if you allow with a little additional discomfort, it might be as many as a third at most. Now, 2005-06 ADA survey, which just came out, the ADA guards these studies like they were the crown jewels. Years ago, they used to print the studies in the Journal of Dentistry and the Journal of the American Dental Association. Today, you have to pay maybe $150 to get the report on dental procedures, which I'm going to be citing here. Notice 46.3 million total extractions. Really a tremendous number of teeth are still being extracted. Even though we think we're making progress in dental health, you might have to ask, well, which segment of the population is benefiting from the progress? 4% of the so-called impactions are removed by oral surgeons, and these are annual figures. Now, that comes at the actual figure is 9.9 million. What's interesting, a study was published indicating that they average 52.7 cases, almost 53 cases a year for the removal of third, rather a month, 52 cases a month. And this comes out to about 3.8 million people per year with an average of 2.26 teeth per case. That's what we're talking about. Now, if you look at the distribution, in my computations, I estimated the fees for the different distributions here, which are really, in my view, false. They're saying that 51% of the teeth are full bony impactions. Well, that's a gross exaggeration. But at any rate, there are 6,000 oral and maxillofacial surgeons in active practice. These 6,000 are the ones that are accounting for the 9.9 million so-called impactions, most of which are going to be third molars. Now, is it safe and harmless? This is, again, is a little repetitious, but let's take a look at it. The incidence of third molar mandibular paresthesia. I say two studies here, but I just came across another study someplace which pretty much mirrored the 4.4% temporary and 1% permanent. We really don't know what the incidence is. So I've taken the lowest figure and the worst case scenario that are possible. And if we, there's the third study that I just came across right down the bottom. Published 2006. And the figures they came were closer to the 4% temporary and 1% permanent. I think this is high from my own experience, but nonetheless, it's somewhere, the range is somewhere in between a third of a percent and a full percent. Now, a conservative estimate, if 1.3% mandibular nerve injuries, 65,000 people, most of which are going to be temporary. But if 0.33% are going to be permanent, you're going to have 16,500 people inflicted with permanent paresthesia each year. It's not trivial. Worst case scenario, you can have 220,000 people with temporary paresthesia. I know these figures sound crazy, but this is from their studies, extrapolating it from their own studies. 1% of injuries could amount to 50,000 people with permanent paresthesia. And what I'm saying is, two-thirds of these people don't need it, no symptoms past or present, then at least 11,000 to 34,000 people are being injured each year for no good reason at all. At least not to us. Well, are these the hysterical distortions of a madman? There are some that would say definitely yes. But I'm saying maybe we should be mad. Even if we say that I'm 50% wrong on this, then you would still have between 8,000 and 25,000 people afflicted with permanent paresthesia each year for no good reason. Now, this table here, a little complicated. I'm not going to go into it at all, except to say that there's an unavoidable 20 to 30% people who do have to have their third molars taken out. So you're still going to have 5,000 permanent paresthesias, but these are, we would call, unavoidable. what you are going to have, if two-thirds are unnecessary, anywhere from 11,000 to 34,000 unnecessary ones. And what about injury to the joint? You know, when you give the person a mandibular injection, their mouths are open and they have voluntary control and can prevent you from stretching the mouth too far. But if you put them under a general anesthetic, then you can injure the joint because the patient doesn't resist the overstretching. And we're finding that it's as many as 1.6% in the age group 15 to 20 translates to 15,000 TMJ injuries a year. And this is just in this one age group. Now, they say that these teeth have no function. Well, they certainly have no value to oral surgeons except for the money they can get out of it. But what about to others? Here are cases where a second molar has been taken out. The third molar can take its position, and it did here. Here's another case where a friend of mine many years ago, an impacted third molar, these teeth split and had to be extracted. He put a cap on the third molar, then constructed a bridge over, and 10 years later you still have that bridge present. Here's a case where an impacted third molar, we assisted the eruption, we pulled it into position, forms an abutment for a bridge. That is certainly a very useful tooth. And this is the tooth, what we call the mesioangular impaction, which is the tooth that is the most likely to result in paresthesia. I estimate it could be as high as 7%. The reason being that when it's in this position, the roots either are lying in close proximity or they're wrapping around, saddling the mandibular nerve. So, I'm not going to go too much into the overcharging of classification because my time is limited, except to say that they'll call a simple extraction, a surgical extraction, an impacted tooth, a soft tissue procedure, they'll call a full bony procedure. And is it gilding the lily or fraud? I'll let you guess what I think. And I don't know what happened on this slide, but we'll go through this. That's interesting. I was just going to show you the different classifications. This you've already seen. They'll call these upper third molars full bony impactions. They're erupting teeth. They're not impacted at all. And they're very simple extractions. But if they call them a full bony extraction, they can really make a lot of money out of it. So again, this is a repetition of the previous slide. These teeth should not be a covered benefit. Insurance shouldn't pay for it, and of course the patient shouldn't. Again, calling these teeth impacted teeth or erupting teeth, they shouldn't be a covered benefit. Now, if we were to eliminate the non-payment for these unerupted teeth, simply refuse to pay for them, as well as to correct the overclassification of the procedures, it only takes about 5 minutes to review an insurance claim submitted to the insurance company. We could save as much as in $212 a claim submitted by an oral surgeon. 3.8 million claims would come to $800 million. And that seems a lot, but I tell you, it's really peanuts compared to what we would save if we eliminated the unnecessary extractions. And here we have the unnecessary radiographs. They take all of these pantographs, all of those full pictures, which the general practitioner who referred the patient has already taken x-rays that are useful. You don't need these fun pantographs. So if 67% of these x-rays are unnecessary, another $200 million wasted that we shouldn't be paying for. Now, what about screening benefits? We can contain the cost from an insurance standpoint, but we can protect the patient perhaps a little bit from iatrogenic injury by applying evidence-based benefits. Fact is that the insurance companies and the unions, most of these organizations are not interested in saving money. They want to avoid problems. They don't want to hear the screaming oral surgeons. They don't want to hear the patients complaining that they're being denied benefits. So it's very hard to administer these programs, but it can be done. I've done it. I've also been fired for doing it. So what we're saying is more than once. Evidence-based versus economic-based third molar surgery. Dollars tell the story. There's no other major medical or dental specialty except perhaps plastic surgery that makes so much money out of so little pathology. I love this slide because I'm quoting myself. Anyway, the cost to the public. We're going to take these 9 million teeth going to cost $4.6 billion. We're talking about a $4.6 billion industry producing 8 million days of standard discomfort and disability. Remember, that's 2.27 days per person. And the cost, how it was figured. $1 billion is paid for general anesthesia, IV sedation, and iatrogenesis. Now, there are only 4.3 deaths a year. Is that a lot or a little? I'm not sure. The main thing is that the morbidity is unknown. We do know a little bit about TMJ. We don't know about fractures. We don't know about hypoxia. How many people are being injured because of lack of oxygen during the administration of a general anesthetic, most of which could be done with a local anesthetic? And here it is. I did this myself, I confess. Age 19, I took out these third molars. Got to tell you, it's a lot of fun taking out these teeth if you enjoy doing that sort of thing. And very simple surgery, and if you delay it, it's even easier when the teeth erupt. Well, on the other hand, I'm very close, I know.
No, I was going to ask a question about that. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. We did use nitrous oxide in our office. I'll let you look at that. Very effective. And really, this tells the story. The reason we give general anesthesia isn't for the patient, it's to relieve ourselves of the anxiety of having to work with an anxious person. That's not that difficult. You know, a patient used to sit in my chair and say, "Oh, doctor, I'm so nervous." And I would say, "Perfectly okay for you to be nervous, but you don't want to make me nervous." And that usually helped relax them a little bit. So anyway, general practitioners, pediatric dentists, orthodontists, they're gullible. And culpable because they believe, some of them believe it, and a lot of them are recommending it, and in my view, they're complicit in the malpractice that's taking place generally in this area. So we have acute remunerative third molar surgery. The average income, gross income, to these 6,000 oral surgeons is $782,000. These are my calculations. If we eliminated 67% of those impactions, over half a million dollars gross income would be eliminated from the oral surgeon. So you see, this is a big business here, and they've got a lot of money invested in this, and no wonder they're going to pay for a four-page advertisement in U.S. Today and elsewhere. Going back to this one. Okay, you know what I did want to mention there is, what does this mean in terms of saving? It's not only dollars. We're going to save 6.6 million people from having these extractions. Well, half of that, 3 million people. 2.5 million fewer people, rather. 6.6 million fewer extractions. Okay, we're summing up what I call the oral surgeon's grand slam scam. If we were to eliminate two-thirds of the fund surgery, we would be saving $3.1 billion. And we would be avoiding 5.1 million days of standard disability. I mean, incredible what's going on and what we could be doing with this money if we could redirect it towards our oral health needs. So we've got to put an end to economic-based practice. If we really believe in evidence-based practice and protecting the public from avoidable injury, physically and financial, then we are morally and ethically bound to eliminate prophylactic removal of wisdom teeth, period.